your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Many people would like to make a living as an advocate or an activist, but far fewer do. So I thought it would be interesting to talk with someone who actually does. And even if you have no desire to make a living as an activist, I thought you'd find it interesting. So in the studio with me is Laura Navarro. She is Senior Policy Manager for the Environmental Defense Fund's California Clean Energy Program. Lauren, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Lauren, was there a moment you decided to try to make a living as an activist?
Yeah, there absolutely was. It was actually back in high school, which was a little bit more far away than I want to admit. But I took an environmental studies class that was a two-year class, and the teacher was very inspiring. And I remember really specifically being inspired by the carbon cycles and the nitrogen cycles, which if you don't know about them or how carbon and nitrogen
glycogen and all of the ATP stuff, is that
the ATP?
Yeah, isn't that what the carbon cycle is? Anyway, I'm sorry. Okay.
I don't know, but it has to do with global warming, how things get around, how it goes and, you know, create carbon sinks in the forests, et cetera. So I learned about it, and I just thought it was so beautiful that it made me want to be an environmentalist. And I was in International Baccalaureate, which is sort of a specialty program at the time. And when you're a senior, you take a bunch of tests. And I got the highest grade of my grades in the environmental studies class. So I decided it was the right thing for me to do and to go into at the time. And it turns out that I've really liked it.
So that confirmed it. So what was your next baby step? What did you do after that to take your next baby step into trying to be a professional environmental advocate person?
So this may actually sound a little weird. I had applied to college thinking I was going to do criminal psychology, which is kind of the complete opposite of environmental activism. But after I got this high grade in the environmental studies class, I switched my major. I shadowed that major in college for the next couple of years, and I switched my major. So that was probably the most immediate next step.
What made you interested in criminal psychology?
Too many episodes of Law and Order with my dad. It seemed interesting at the time.
But. Okay, so you changed majors, and then what?
And then I got internships. So internships are really important.
How'd you get one?
How did I get one? I knew someone. It could have even been my mom or someone knew someone in a program. I started out actually in high school. I did a few internships in the legislature. And then I think I may have even cold called somebody and just said, I want to intern with you.
Wow.
Yeah. And he said, well, you're not a law student. It was a lawyer who did environmental law. But you're, you know, I'm really impressed by how you called me and you asked this. So let me put you in this other location. Was it an environmental nonprofit in Sacramento?
Let's turn to what your life is like as an activist who gets paid for it, actually. A lot of your work is to try to convince the government to enact legislation that the Environmental Defense Fund would support. Walk me through that process.
Sure. So every day we try to make friends, I think is the best way to think about it. It's really important that you get people on your side. And so for any given bill or idea or issue, you would start by seeing who is interested in it, who's supporting it, who would support it, and who would oppose it. And obviously, if there are a lot of people opposed, you're not going to get very far. So you try to get them on board. So once you do that process,
so do you focus on the ones where that are where it's close, or do you want to find ones that are you just need a couple of votes? I mean, how do you pick which issues to focus on?
Well, I think you pick the important issues, right? Okay. The ones that make the biggest difference when it comes to global warming, which is what we think the most about, like climate change emissions.
Okay.
And then some of those are harder than others. Some of them take multi-years, like the policy I'm working on right now. Which is creating a regional electricity grid, which helps renewables flow more easily across states. That's something that I actually saw fail this past year, which I always think in legislative year. So my year just ended in August. So this past year, meaning a few weeks ago, but we think that it'll continue. So to answer your question, you get an author, you get a bill, you get folks to weigh in support of your bill.
How do you do that? How do you get somebody's support? Do you talk to them, send them legal briefs? What do you do?
Legal briefs. So I have not written a legal brief probably since law school. So you call them. Mm. That's why I say come back to making friends, right? So you call them.
Wow.
You meet with them. You hope they'll support your issue. And if you don't know them, you reach out to them or you know someone who knows them. It's really a lot about...
Wow, networking. Jeez.
Networking and who you know.
My God. So, you know, you said it failed last year. What are you going to do differently this year to increase the chances of it passing?
Well, we'll see. So I guess we need to make more friends.
Amazing how important this is. I'm a little surprised. Go ahead.
There are some powerful groups who were against it last year, and I think that's fine. I mean, maybe we'll go in a different direction, a slightly different direction that isn't as big of a step forward. We're still sort of weighing what the options are and trying to figure out what we're going to do next. Yeah.
Let's talk about a win. Have you had, you know, you've been doing this for 10 years. What's the biggest win you would say you've had as an environmental activist?
So I've had a few, but I want to just talk about one that I think is the most significant in my mind. And that was, it was actually a few years ago, and it was AB 1937, which was a bill by a man who's now in Congress, federal United States Congress, which is kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. But we helped him to pass a bill that reduced the occurrence of natural gas power plants in disadvantaged communities with high levels of air pollution.
Right.
Right.
And what is Lauren Navarro most proud of and what she did to make that happen?
I think it was a really cool bill. One, because I actually got to significantly impact the policy and how the bill was run, which I can't say as much of as the bill I was just working on because so many people were involved. Mm-hmm. It was such a big bill and a big effort. But what I would say is we got the environmental justice folks on board first. Obviously, it was actually their idea. And then we were able to get the natural gas guys to be okay with the bill. We worked things out sort of between the environmental justice community and the natural gas community. And then even the labor folks came on board or at least didn't oppose the bill. So those were all big things. So I guess if you put that together, the thing I'm most proud of about that is that we got everyone on board and to work together. So once we did that, the bill was able to sail through.
Once again, the friend thing, make friends, connect. It's not all the technical crap you learn in law school.
No. And I was going to say you forget what you learn in law school, but you only partially forget what you learn
it's
in law school.
It's true so much of everybody who's ever been on the show talks about the vast majority of what they've learned or what they do has nothing to do with school.
I think the technical elements of it do, like when you're writing a policy and you're thinking about it and what we would include. But I don't think that it applies as much, you know, when you're, what is it, winning friends and influencing people?
Right.
Is that it?
Yeah.
And I did want to let you know, I mean, one of the other things that I really is really proud of this year, this last year, even though we lost, is that I really grew as a person and as an advocate. A friend of mine who is a bit older in the environmental community, and I'm not going to say who because I don't want him to hear me say he's, you know, older, but but he told me, he said, then, you know, even if you lose, you personally made big strides. Like, I saw you grow. I saw you come into your own and voice your opinions and go against other groups that maybe had different opinions and, you know, that were really strong and vocal and, like, come up, you know, with your own opinions and vision and vocalize those. So
I'm
was
hearing
a big deal.
You're saying you've gotten more of a strong voice. Is that correct?
Yes, even as we lost.
Right.
So we're going to push forward. At least I'm going to push forward and I think becoming more myself. And
what would that look like next year? If we made the movie, the Lauren Navarro movie, in which she was, let's say, gaining her voice stronger in the coming fiscal year or whatever that year is called, legislative year.
Yeah.
What would that, in that movie, what would the new Lauren look like?
Well, first off, I get to take 3 months off because it doesn't start until January.
That's pretty cool right there. You get 3 months?
Well, I mean, I'm working, but it's slow. It's slow compared with the legislative session. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's very busy with the legislative session, so I don't want to convince people otherwise. Like, we are busy during the year, but right now it's like it's summer break, right?
Okay. And so what would the movie look like when things got back into the swing of things? What would the new and improved Lauren look like? look like?
I think that it's really important to maintain your focus, you know, in what you want to say. And for me personally, that means, it sounds weird saying, it's just staying very focused in my third eye. I don't want to confuse people too much about that. But I actually meditate and I chant when I'm speaking with people.
Mm.
And that comes across, I think, as just being very focused and aware and really listening to people and their interests and telling them like how we all want to get something done together and how do we make that happen.
Well, I noticed you meditated right before you went on the air.
I did a little bit.
I saw it. Right. So let's go right to that focus question. Every single guest who's ever been on the show in the 29 years said, oh, darn, I wish I had said that. So now you're being laser focused. You're in the moment. You're being present, all the rest of that. What's the one thing that you want to make sure you tell our listeners that you haven't yet said about what it's really like to be an environmental activist for a living?
I think that you can't undercount the difficulty in going against forces that are much bigger than you and have a lot more money. And of course, in that, I would mean the fossil fuel industry. I think even the utilities, I work in energy policy, so those are sort of my foes, but they're not. Even the utilities, I think, come around to clean energy, but there are a lot of forces that have a lot of money, right, and power and influence. But I think it's very important that we maintain our focus, maintain our composure, and maintain a good attitude and just keep on going. Because if we don't do it, you know, who's going to do it? And I guess you could say the next generation. But, you know, it's good to learn things and move on and be able to take those things with you, right? Like when I first started this in my early 20s, they said the burnout age for legislative advocates for environmental stuff was 30.
Wow. That's interesting and surprising. Wow.
And I don't believe that now because I am older than 30, slightly, not by, well, okay, a little bit, but I don't feel like burning out. I feel like it really just has to do with maintaining a good attitude and keeping up your spirits through whatever means you can do that. Because the fact is you do lose. You put a lot of effort into things and you do lose, but that's okay. You know, you build momentum. Things take a lot of time to get done, you know.
What do you do to you know, everybody suffers from a certain amount of burnout at some point. You say there's this high burnout rate. What does Laura Navarro do to re-energize?
So I meditate a lot. I do a lot of spiritual practice every day, which really helps. I talk with people who I like, my friends who I trust a lot and really like, particularly those who are in my field, about what things are like and how we can work together. I also love to be outside. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a reason we're protecting the environment, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us do. And I like to keep my eye on the prize, which is working together with greater groups who we don't have things immediately in common with, and how you're able to create cohesive policies, because to me, I think that is the win in society.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with Laura Navarro. She is the Senior Policy Manager for the Environmental Defense Fund, California Clean Energy Program. We're talking about what it's really like to make a living as an environmental activist. There's that laughter in my voice because I know how many volunteers there are. You know, what would you say to the many people who fear that, you know, I care about the environment? It seems like half the Bay Area or 9/10 of the Bay Area cares about the environment.
Yep, thank you, guys.
Right, exactly. But what do you say to those people who are listening and say, oh, I would love to make a living as an environmental activist or advocate? What would you tell them?
I think, so one is, I would say it's, I mean, I can tell a little bit, again, stepping back to talk about my path, I studied environmental policy in college. So I think that is really helpful. I would say as you do that, get internships. As you do that, talk with a lot of people. I mean, I talked a lot about making friends. That goes with your job, too. See who you can meet in the environmental community. And if you're an intern, you know, an unpaid volunteer, still meet as many people as you can within your organization and beyond.
You're continuing to stress this networking thing. From the minute I met you, I just met you 2 minutes before the show. you were very personable, you're you know, engaging, etc. Many people are not as outgoing and social as you are. And if I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the typical listener or the introvert, thinking, oh my God, I care about the environment, but my God, I am not Mr. or Ms. Socialite. Is there room for an introvert in this field?
So I'm really glad you asked that, because actually I'm a total introvert and
wow.
I'm very shy.
Wow.
Yes, I have to work to talk with people, and that's okay. And that's why I think it comes back to, for me, it's meditating at the beginning or the end of the day. Like, you find your own personal focus and why you're doing what you're doing and what you want to do, and you just talk with people. And, you know, they're not so scary. I've actually never had anything bad happened to mm-hmm. me in the last 10 or 11 years I've been doing
wow.
this.
You know, I like to end these interviews with, you know, I'm a career counselor. That's what I do during the week. And this is my pro bono work. And I like to be of service to my guests. You know, you've raced here from your meeting in San Jose and all the rest of it. I would like to be of service to you. So everybody has a career issue of some sort. What's the career issue that you would like to run by me and I'll see if I can be of some help?
You're throwing me a curveball here.
Of course I am. This is a conversation. It's like we're having, like, you know, I tell all my guests, you know, it's like we're having our second beer. This is like our second, you know,
okay.
we're having a conversation.
So now that I'm being honest with you after that that second beer that we're having, I have always wanted to go, or a long time wanted to go, into mediation. And the reason for that is how important I think it is for people to work together in society and come out on the end with sort of a better product. And so you can hear from a lot of the stuff I've said, like, I think it's important to work with other people well. And that is how policy is made. So I feel like maybe I'm solving my own problem even as I'm talking about this. But I guess maybe I'm curious how, like, mediation, you know, bringing people together who have differences can play an even bigger role.
Well, you may have already taken mediation courses, but there's an intuition that we all have that one can mediate simply by being a conciliatory person by nature. But there are techniques. And also, beyond the techniques, by taking some of these short courses, they're very often short one-day or weekend-long courses, you also add that to your resume. So when they need to bring in somebody who is a conciliator, there you are. And I don't think you need to make career change. You're just adding that tool, that tool to your toolkit. So if you haven't already, and even if you've taken one or two, there's so many different approaches to it. If I said the next baby step for Laura Navarro is to find one or two of these short, because I'm sure you're very busy, one or two of these short mediation training programs that have great reviews from the users, and take that. To what extent have you already done that versus is that a good idea?
I've done a couple. I actually studied mediation in law school, which mm-hmm. is one of the most influential classes I've mm-hmm. taken, if you can't
mm-hmm.
tell.
Mm-hmm.
And I took maybe one of those weekend long ones you're talking about, but I would love to take more. So
there's so many, and there are different types, different approaches. It's like I'm a career counselor. There's many flavors. So, okay, I want to give you again, in our meditation, being in the moment, be present self. I'm going to give you one more shot. What is one more thing that you would like to tell our listeners about your life as somebody who makes a living? If I were your brother, what would you want to tell me about your life as an environmental activist for the Environmental Defense Fund?
I was sort of joking with a friend of mine in the environmental community to say, you know, don't do it. But I'm not going to say that. It is stressful on a daily basis. We're very busy. We're outnumbered, as I said. But the thing is, you totally should do it, because it's a really important thing to protect the planet and the people who live in it. So I guess take it one step at a time. And if, sort of like you're saying, if you can't go out and have this be your entire career, what can you do on the weekends? What can you do to help? And I guarantee you, you will meet the connections you need to make and make the friends you need to make to move into that as your career, if that's what you want to do.
Okay, Laura Navarro, thank you very much for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemco.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And now I turn to you, my dear listeners. Only twice a year, and this is like the last time before this membership drive, this fund drive ends, I need you to step up to support KALW and Work with Marty Nemco. If you like Work with Marty Nemco, either because you like my interview and my second beer interviewing style, or you like the when people call in with a work-related problem and you like when I try to help them solve it, or you like when my wife, Barbara Nemco, comes on the show and she gives me a hard time and we argue about all matters of career things, this is really your last chance to do it. This is my 1 hour, and every dollar you donate to KELW is a vote for Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. And so 1-800-525-9917. And because we believe in both intrinsic motivation and extrinsic motivation, I'm going to give you two reasons. Intrinsically, it feels good to be an active supporter of public radio. You listen differently, feeling like you're a part of it. You're a part of this community that values public, intelligent public radio ethos. That feels great. But if that ain't enough, here are some extrinsic reasons. The basic membership is $50. That'll be great. I'm grateful for every dollar. Oh, by the way, it doesn't come to me. This is my pro bono work. I do this as a volunteer. But it takes money to keep the lights running. So that's the basic membership. But we got a couple of special things here for you. If you call 1-800-525-9917 or especially go to kalw.org where they will mention the following two thank you gifts. My 11th book just got published. You know those yellow and black dummies books? Careers for Dummies. It summarizes my 29 years as a career counselor. Everything I know, autographed specifically to you, not to KELW listener. $100 will get you the great feeling of supporting public radio and a signed copy. But that's not the best thing. And I swear this is the truth. This is the best. For $175 for one person or $300 for a couple, my wife and I will invite you to come to the station on November 15th, sit in the show in the studio right here, see how radio is made, and then afterwards we're going to have a great dinner together. It's a fun experience. It is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. It is a networking experience. You can tell me how much you think the show stinks and how much you want it to be improved. There have been a number of people who have come a number of times. I've been doing this, offering this periodically every year or three for a long time. So those are all good reasons to support Work with Marty Nemco and KELW, the phone number and the website. Maybe even easier right now to go to kalw.org. That's kalw.org. Or you can call and it'll go into I don't know what happens, but something good will happen if you call 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. Joanne Marr, who has been my longtime announcer here on this show, you've been listening to me. What do you want to add to this or say just go back to your programming?
Well, we're in the last 24 hours of the KALW Fall Membership Campaign, and if you've been listening for the last 10 days, if you listened last Thursday and we didn't convince you to come to the phone at 800-525-9917, do it now and be counted towards our goal. We hope to reach it by tomorrow, and you can be part of our campaign. 800-525-9917 or online kalw.org.
And I'll just end by saying I always say thank you. If you can't afford a dime, if you're curled up in a bed and you can't afford a dime and you're homeless, I honor your listenership. You don't need to give a penny. But if you're one of those, I've had one listener give $5,000. Not because they cared about a damn about thank you gifts, but they cared about changing the hearts and minds of people. They cared about, which is what public radio does, they cared that I do help a lot of people, whether they are unemployed or extraordinarily well-employed and still unhappy. If you want to support that kind of radio, kalw.org. And of course, I'd love to have you come to dinner on November 15th, meet my wife and see the radio show and all that. kalw.org and 1-800-525-9917. And now, enough of that. I'm sure you'd rather hear me talk about something that's of value to you, although being a member is a value. But I want to share in preparation for this show, because it's a special show, this is the only hour that I'm asking for your money until May. I've been on this air now 29 years. I start my 30th year October 4th. And I reviewed my previous shows, my notes, my 11 books, my 3,400 articles. By the way, I'm honored that a number of the things I'm going to share with you were included in a website called Inspirational Quotations. The site has pages for the likes of Einstein, Lincoln, and Ben Franklin, and me? Give me a break. Anyway, here are some of I came up with 34 kind of one-liner or two-liner pieces of advice that I think are most likely to be helpful, and I wanted to share them with you one after another. The first section of them are five of them about choosing a career. The first one, status is the enemy of contentment. So many people seek status that a good, high-status job is hard to land. And if you get one, you may soon discover that status provides little lasting pleasure, but it imposes quite a bit of opportunity cost, what you could have been doing had you focused more on what you're good at and enjoy rather than status. That's tip one. Tip two, consider what I call under-the-radar careers. It is much easier to land a job that's good in a career that isn't top of mind for people. Environmental activists is top of mind for a zillion people, but a lot of them aren't. And so there are many of those kind of less well-known careers that many people find rewarding. Just a few examples. Optometrist. Everybody thinks healthcare, oh, doctor, nurse. Optometrists have very high satisfaction and no calls in the middle of the night. No emergency, my contact lens, no. And it pays six figures and it doesn't take anywhere near as long as being an MD. Program evaluator. We have an ever larger proportion of GDP, gross domestic product, is allocated by grants. A grant is given to a nonprofit, to a government agency, even sometimes to individuals. And the requirement is that in exchange for the money, they need an evaluation. And a program evaluator's job is to go from program to program, doing an evaluation not only to see how good it is, but how might it be improved. What a cool job is that, getting to see innovation all the time. It's under the radar. Nobody ever grew up thinking, oh, I think when I grow up, I'm going to be a program evaluator. Under the radar. Neon sign maker. Let's say you're more of a blue-collar person. You know, we think, I'm going to be a carpenter, I'm an electrician. Sometimes people think, yeah, I'm going to be a robot repair person. But nobody thinks about being a neon sign maker. And yet, tons of stores and businesses need a neon sign because these are custom. They take molten glass and they mold it and these cool colors. Under the radar career. Forensic accountant. I'm trying to have a wide range. Forensic accountant. Everybody knows about accountants, CPA, do my taxes, audit that damn business. But also, there's, unfortunately, for better, there's a lot of theft that goes on, either internally within the organization or outside. A forensic accountant's job is to find fraud. Cool niche. Under the radar. So that's my second tip. Third, give not necessarily to the neediest, but to those likely to benefit most. As every battlefield medic knows, it's usually wisest to allocate resources not necessarily to the weakest, but to those with the most potential to benefit. Harkening back on my interview with Laura Navarro just now, she is evaluating. She wanted to have this regional grid, this electrical grid, which would enable better flow of alternative energy through the entire grid, but it failed. And she's contemplating saying, you know, maybe I'm biting the salami off too much with one big bite. Maybe I need to slice the salami or the vegan, the tofu, the boiled tofu into slices so that you could get it a bit at a time. It's like that's what's going on with single-payer healthcare. There's no question that Obamacare was, everybody knew from inside, that this was only the first slice in the salami and the end goal is single-payer. So the same thing here. She's not necessarily considering allocating resources to the biggest part of the problem, but a problem that's where she can make, where has a shot at winning. So give not necessarily to the neediest or to the biggest problem, but to those or to that where they're likely to benefit most. Next tip, use your current life I'm talking about now about tips about choosing a career. Use your current life activities to pick a career. How do you spend your discretionary time? What do you love to talk about or read about? Those are often really good clues as to what you want to do. By the way, I wanted to drive home how does giving not necessarily to the neediest but those likely to benefit most, what does it have to do with choosing a career? Everything. There's no question that the neediest people are the homeless, illiterate, drug addicted, multi-generational poor. But We have spent trillions of dollars trying to address that problem, and the problem remains, as an article in U.S. News came out a year or two ago, the achievement gap is as wide as ever. So sometimes it's helpful to work on a problem that is more amenable to real improvement. For example, part of me, if I were starting over again, I would want to work in a blue-collar school with gifted kids. Because blue-collar kids don't have the advantages of the rich, but they have huge potential that gets ignored. Because in the rich schools, they can afford all these programs. So that's not the neediest people. They don't have the greatest gap. But it's certainly not irrational to say that I want to work with those with the greatest potential to profit. And that is a final tip in terms of choosing a career. Now I want to turn. By the way, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemko. I am offering, because this is a special show today, this is the last hour of my membership drive show. Before I'm asking for your money, I want to give you as much as I can. And so I've assembled a list of 34 of what I think are my most potent, useful tips related to your career. And the first section of them was about choosing career. Now I want to talk about training for your career and some tips here. Learn from Google. You will likely learn more of enduring value from 1 hour of wise Googling than from any course. But we take it for granted because it's free, it's instant, but it's up to date, it's current, and it's just-in-time learning. Please don't underestimate the value of Google searching as a learning tool. Next tip. There are a lot of how-to books that basically I call them, it worked for me, so it'll work for you. No, they rarely work for people. Why? Because the typical readers of a how-to book are less intelligent or less driven than are the authors of those how-to books. So just because it worked for the author doesn't mean it's going to work for a normal human being. So that's another reason I tend to avoid, reading a book, even if you get it for free from the library, is a huge commitment of time. And to rely on a how-to book for your success may not be the best use of your time. Articles tend to be more useful in that regard because somebody doesn't have to be a driven workaholic to write a book. I've written 11. I know how much work it is. It's crazy. So if it worked for me, it's not going to work for normal human beings necessarily. They're not that compulsive as I am. So that's another reason to rely on the article. Next tip about career training. Ever more people will be deciding that getting that degree is not the best use of their money and time. The proliferation of degree holders, combined with the ballooning cost of degrees, means that more people would be wise, not everybody, but more people would be wise to forego state U, let alone private U, in favor of what I call UU. That's some combination of self-study, mentorships, internships, professional conferences, short courses like on LinkedIn Learning or Udemy, or Udacity for tech stuff, or if you like in person, university extensions like UC Berkeley Extension offers really good practical courses. By the way, I should mention, I will be honored that I'm being asked back for the third time at UC Berkeley Extension. They do what's called a public lecture where there's no fee, open to the public on October 30th, and it's going to be about not obvious advice for career changers. That's October 30th at UC Berkeley Extension. Okay. The final tip I want to offer about career training is this. Especially think twice before pursuing an art, music, film, or theater degree. While I really do respect people who are willing to risk poverty to be an artist, the cost-benefit of an arts college is dubious. I can't tell you how many crying clients I've had who are in six figures of debt because they went to a music college, a drama college, an art college, because they saw the website and the salesperson, the admissions salesperson, talking about who, the anomalous outlier person who got this really, who's making zillions of dollars. Most of them are baristas, literally or metaphorically. So nobody loves the arts more than me. I'm a pianist. I'm an actor. I've directed plays. I love it. My wife is right now as we speak. She's in rehearsal for a play. But do it. and maybe do it for a living if you feel you can, but it's the world's, I consider it the world's greatest hobby, world's worst career, and certainly it's very risky to take on six figures, solid six figures of cost and the 4 or 5 years of art college, music college, etc. Okay, now I want to turn to tips for landing a job. If you're a career changer, just like Laura Navarro, my guest, said before, you have to rely on your network. I hate networking. I'm a total introvert. Just because I'm upbeat on this show, don't think I'm a total introvert. I like nothing better than writing, reading, playing with my dog, and hanging out with my wife. But the real world, I'm not here talking about me. I'm here talking about what works in the real world is what Laura Navarro said. You got to rely on your network. Your best chance of landing a job, if you're a career changer, in other words, you have little or no experience, is to tap someone who knows you and likes you or better loves you. A stranger who's got a good job that they're listing is almost always going to prefer somebody who's got experience. Why would they hire a newbie? It's only somebody who loves you. You've got to rely on your network. And if you're like me, thank God I don't need a job. But if I needed a job, I would force myself, as Lauren says, she's an introvert. I'd force myself to build a network. And not just a glad-handing BS network. I would try to make real friends. And yes, in high places where people could help me get a job. I would join boards. I'd get on a board of, like, I was on a board of a theater company. I'd get on a board of something that where I could be a good friend and a good colleague, but also where they could help me get work. Okay. Next tip for landing a job, also for career changers. This has worked so often for my clients. Write a white paper. You boost your chances of landing a job where you have no experience by writing what I call a white paper. That's like a 2 to 5 page paper that demonstrates your current knowledge in that field to which you aspire. And then you append that. Because you may have no experience, but if you have really done a good review of the literature using Google searches, and you say, here are the 10 keys to being an effective environmental activist in 2019, that can compensate for the lack of experience sometimes. Nothing always works. This is public radio. This is not the land of hype. This is the land of reality. Every one of these things incrementally increases your chances. Nothing guarantees squat. I think this is a good time. Squat's a good way to end the segment. I'm going to be sharing more of these, my favorite, I think, most useful tips for enhancing your career. But I now invite you, this is, as I said, the last time, I need to ask for your support. If you like Work with Marty Nemco, if you find it helpful or even mildly entertaining, especially, most people, when I ask them what they like best about the show, it's not me. It's my wife. So if you like my wife, or you like me, or you like KALW, there's a wide range of programming here. Think about why you listen to KALW. If you like it, please go to KALW.org. $50 basic membership. $100 gets you a signed copy of my book, Careers for Dummies. And $175 a person, $300 for a couple. Come to dinner. Come to the show on November 15th. My wife, Barbara Nemco, and I will be here. You come in the studio. You sit here. Watch us interact with each other. And then we'll have dinner. Lovely dinner. Usually about 10 people. It's no cattle call. This is for people who care enough about Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco to donate $175 for one person, $300 for a couple. For all those reasons, please support us. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KALW. The phone number 1-800-525-9917. And perhaps easier, go to KALW.org. That is KALW.org. Joanne Marr, what do you have to say?
This is the last time we'll be coming at you, asking for your support.
Coming at you, it's kind of weird.
During Work with Marty Nemco, because we won't be back for another 8 months. So if you're a fan of this program, you listen to Work with Marty Nemco to get some solid advice about careers, then show your support and appreciation for Marty Nemco, who comes every Thursday on a volunteer basis, 800-525-9917, or online at KALW.org. You can contribute $120. That's $10 a month on credit card or EFT, and we'll send you an autographed copy of Marty's latest book, Careers for Dummies.
It's 100, actually. It's not 120. It's 100.
It says 120 here.
They made a mistake. I checked that out with it's 100. See, I'm giving you a bargain. It's 100 bucks.
Okay, and then we also have Dinner with the Nemcos. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah. We've done this a few times, and it is a fun networking event. You come into the studio. If you don't have to, if you don't want to, you can just come for dinner. But most people like to come in the studio, watch Barbara and me do our show. And then afterwards, we have a lovely dinner here at KALW, which we bring in, have catered in. And then we go around the room, and people can either ask me a question or make a comment what they'd like to hear, either a question about their work life or, what they'd like to hear us do on the radio differently. Or it's just a great networking and fun opportunity, and everybody leaves well-sated in food and laughter, and that's what it is. And it's November 15th, Thursday night, November 15th.
And it's $175 for one person to join us for dinner on November 15th, and $300 for two people.
Great. And so just go to KALW.org, KALW.org, 1-800-525-9917. I like to make a special call out. I'm so grateful for some people who have given really large amounts of money, well beyond the thank you gifts. As I said, I've gotten $1,000 gifts. I've gotten one $5,000 gift. And when I asked them why they did it, yes, they like my show a lot, but they also believe that public, especially in these times, public radio is an important voice for edifying the hearts and minds of society. And it reaches thousands and thousands and thousands of people. That's a pretty darn good use of one's donation dollars. So if that's you, and you like work with Marty Nemco, you get two for one. You get every dollar is a vote of support for work with Marty Nemco. But it also, none of it goes to me. It all goes to public radio. And if you're a new member, if you're a longtime listener but never made a donation, KALW.org. If you've just moved to the Bay Area and discovered KALW, you like what you hear, KALW.org. And if you do feel that public radio is particularly important at this moment in our country, KALW.org or 1-800-525-9917. Okay. I want to go back and offer you some more tips. As I said, for this special program, I've collected what I believe are my most useful tips related to career that I want to share with you. So now I want to talk about people who are on the job, because after all, most people who listen to this show are not looking for work. They're on the job, but they want to be more successful or contented. And so here are some tips for people like that. Talking too much, and it's ironic for a talk show host to say this, but talking too much is a career killer. Keep all your utterances to less than 45 seconds. And if you're in dialogue with somebody, you're talking with just one person, aim to speak 30 to 50% of the time, a little less than half the time. Because if you talk, there's only a certain amount of energy in a conversation. And if you're talking more than half the time, you're sucking up too much of the air, too much of the energy in the conversation. Nobody wants to be talked at. And of course, in the radio, I have to do that here, partly because during these membership drive shows, I can't take calls. Normally, I take calls. But normally, if I'm having a conversation with somebody, whether it be my client or my friend or my wife, I try to talk 30 to 50% of the time. It really is an important tip. Next tip for accomplishing when you're on the job. Keep a memo pad with you, or use the voice memos thing on your phone. Like when you're sitting in traffic, think of ideas. When you're hiking, bring an idea with you, your toughest thorny problem. And yeah, some of the time you just want to zone out and be one with nature, and all that. But sometimes you may want to say, okay, I'm bored with nature a little bit. I'm going to go and think about my problem. You're not stuck. You don't have any distractions. You're able to think clearly because you're exercising, which increases oxygenation of the brain, and you're not distracted by two phone calls, seven emails, and six texts. So keeping a memo pad with you, writing them down, and then make a point of implementing them. And normally when they're fresh in your mind, when I write down, normally when I get back to my office, I pull out that piece of paper and I simply say, okay, I'm going to act on it now. Another tip I hadn't planned on mentioning, I try like hell to avoid putting things on my to-do list. If it's something I can do in a minute or two, I do it now. It's really freeing to do that. Okay, next tip. School success inadequately predicts life success. School can give you either a false sense of confidence because you are this 4-0 student or whatever, and you can still do crappy in the real world. Or if you're just not academic, you can feel like a total loser if you've got a great, lousy grade point average, but you could be really quite successful in the real world. So don't let your school success make you feel like it predetermines your life success. Next tip. Accomplishment can fuel motivation more than recreation often does. I've had the privilege of being career and personal coach to some of the most successful people on planet Earth, as well as some real strugglers. And one of the differentiating features between the successful and unsuccessful is that successful, productive people fuel themselves mainly from their work and their accomplishment. Less successful people try, and often unsuccessfully, to recharge themselves by recreation. If you're doing work you're good at, and not too difficult for too long, you're going to be more recharged from your successes, from the attagirls and the attaboys, than walking in nature. I've had so many clients who are unsuccessful say, you know, I need a vacation. So they go take a trip, you know, for a week or a month, or they take time off. And they end up coming back feeling no better about themselves, and they only feel like time has passed them by more. So find work that you're good at and look for opportunities to do that, go work. That's going to be more recharge. People often ask me, I'm not a kid anymore, and I've had 5,400 clients. People say, how come I never burn out? Because I'm doing work that is I'm relatively good at, and I've stayed focused on being a career counselor for 30 years so that I'm not burned out. I feel like I know what I'm doing when I'm either on this radio show or I'm seeing clients. So I'm going to feel more recharged working with a client than I would sitting on a beach. So accomplishment can fuel motivation more than even recreation does. Next tip. When facing a dreaded task, ask yourself this. What is my next 1 second task? It feels good to get even a tiny task done, make that little bit of progress, and maybe learn something along the way. A few of those 1 second tests may be enough to get you rolling. As they say, an object at rest tends to stay at rest, an object in motion, you know. So that's really helpful, 1 second tasks. Here is something that you don't often hear. Don't discount individualism. Today, the word community and teamwork is used more often than the word the. Community, teamwork, collaboration, community, teamwork, collaboration, teamwork, community. Don't forget that individualism also has pluses. Results tend to be bolder when an individual can make the decision rather than a meeting by consensus, which ends up being the only thing everybody can agree with is the lowest common denominator. The person who's doing that one, if they're a solo operator doing that one activity, is more motivated, more invested, because they don't have 17 other people as part of the committee having input. And think about how much human resources gets wasted on meetings. You go, we really should get a committee for this. And so there's 5 or 6 or 8 people on the committee. And now they got to stop what they're doing and meet and collaborate and communicate with each other so that one hand knows what the other is doing. And the thing ends up being disjointed so often. I'm not saying that there isn't room for collaboration, teamwork, etc. But don't discount individualism. Especially if you are somebody who's not the world's greatest team player. Look for opportunities to do things as an individual. Next. We often dub people who work hard workaholics. Like pathologizing until they have a disease like alcoholic. But is that really, I've seen too often, the people most likely to dub a person workaholic are the people who are very minimally productive themselves. So to preserve their self-esteem, they pathologize them with a label. You're a workaholic! For many people who work long hours, the right word is heroic, not workaholic. And so I think, again, we deify work-life balance. Somebody who works more than the 40 hours a week is seen as out of balance, workaholic. And yet I know people who work 60, 70, 80 hours a week even, who make enormous contributions, and they're not burned out because they're doing work they're good at. the cardiologist who works nights and weekends because he or she is great and is wanting to save people's lives nights and weekends is not a workaholic. It's a heroic person. They're not doing it for the money. They make plenty of money. Cardiologists make plenty of money working 30 hours a week. They're heroic. Don't denigrate those heroes of our society. Next, dealing with people. As Laura Navarro, my guest from the Environmental Defense Fund, stressed again and again and again, it's so important for most jobs. Value honesty over flattery. How feeble we are that we may be swayed more by dubious flattery than by valid suggestions. Somebody who is willing to be honest with you, you should honor that. You don't have to listen to everything they say or do implement what they say, but listen and maybe realize that they're really your true friends. You know how many people suck up? Be careful. Next, if you're a manager, don't practice one-size-fits-all management. Just as different plants, you know, house plants or outdoor plants, need different watering, different sunlight, so do people. Some people need more supervision. Some people need less. Some people need longer training before letting them go to work on their own. Others less. Do not practice one-size-fits-all management. And when one of your supervisors says, that's not fair, you let him not have to report, you know, daily on his progress, you say, my job is to not treat everybody equally. My job is to treat everybody fairly, to bring out the best in each person. That requires a lot of calm because we live in an era of loud and proud. And so when somebody is loud and proud in your face about you're not treating them equally, it's scary. But the wise person is able to take a deep breath or three and say, no, my calling, my responsibility is to treat people fairly, not equally. Next. Please don't overvalue physical appearance. Why do so many people prefer a silly, manipulative, games-playing, selfish hottie, male or female, over an ugly, intense, honest, kind person? Don't get seduced by physical appearance. Don't let that be a halo. Look at the substance, not the veneer. Next, if another management tip. Instead of first jumping to terminate a weak employee, try counseling them out. Of course, you're going to try to help them get better. But there's a point when you're heart of hearts, you know what, this ain't going to work. My time would be better spent on some other activity than remediating this weak employee. But before initiating formal termination procedures, try counseling out that weak employee, even helping them try to find a better job. That can avoid the amazingly stressful, time-consuming, expensive employee lawsuits. That is exhausting for everybody. Counseling out, I've had many clients who had an employee who drove them crazy, and they were terrified to start termination procedures because they knew that person was at risk of filing a wrongful termination lawsuit. And I said, why don't you try counseling them out? That carrot of helping them try to find a better job may be enough to keep them from being angry, and they're not angry with you. You're saying, you know, I'll role play it. And saying, John, you know, there's a number of good things you do on this job. I really appreciate it. But in general, you're not a great fit for this particular position because of this, this, and this. Remember this and remember this. You know, I would like to help you find a better job that's better suited to your strengths. Would you let me help you do that? And that way, sometimes you can get to leave voluntarily, and cosmically, it's justice is served, and you can avoid the darn lawsuit, which is unbelievably stressful. When somebody is accused of wrongful termination, the lawyers are involved, everybody gets deposed, the accusations are fiery. It's a nightmare for everybody and time-consuming. Okay, next. We're out of time, so I'm just going to go through these quickly. Find hope. Whenever it's ethically possible, give people hope. Without hope, a person suffers unnecessarily and unreasonably gives up at work or even on life. Next, beware the forced smile. If someone smiles at you with pursed lips, they're generally forcing the smile, usually because they're shy or they don't like you. Is that person good or just nice? Some people are nice as a way of compensating for not really being good. Just because you can prove somebody wrong doesn't mean you should. You really have to recognize when the risk-reward ratio of showing that you're right is worth it. So many people would rather be right than anything. And their self-esteem, we live in the land of self-esteem. So if you're showing, you're nailing to the cross, you're wrong, you may win that battle, but they're going to get back at you. Not everybody, but very often they're going to try to screw you later, stab you in the back. And finally, this is a related point, weigh the cost-benefit of criticizing and suggesting. There are costs and benefits every time you criticize or make a suggestion. Sometimes, and only sometimes, is that worth the price. Be conscious about whether it's worth criticizing or suggesting. And those are all the tips I've got. Now, I've got only 2 minutes left that I need to devote to KELW and to talk to you, my dear listeners, directly. If you like Work with Marty Nemko, you value KELW, you value non-commercial public radio, this is the time to go to kalw.org. $100 gets you an autographed copy of my brand new book, Careers for Dummies. $175 or $300 for a couple, you'll cut to come to KELW and watch Barbara and Nemko, my wife, and I do the show, and then have a lovely dinner afterwards where we chat. It's going to only be about 10 people. It's not going to be some huge cattle call. KALW.org or 1-800-525-9917. And I do like to make a particular point of talking to new members, potential. If you've been somebody who, maybe you've been a member of some other public radio station, but you're listening here now and you like Work with Marty Nemko or and you like KALW, what a great time to call 1-800-525-9917. What if you've decided, especially in these roiling times, that you just want to support independent radio? Go to kalw.org or 1-800-525-9917. Or maybe you really just know that every dollar that you were to donate is both a vote for Work with Marty Nemko, because although this is non-commercial radio, the more dollars that are donated, the more the management here at KLW realize that you value Work with Marty Nemko. And, of course, public radio, non-commercial, local public radio here at KLW. So $100 gets you an autographed copy of Careers for Dummies. $175 a person or $300 a couple gets you dinner with Barbara and me and get to watch the show. Last time, KALW.org, KALW.org, 1-800-525-9917. And I want to end by simply saying thank you. Whether you donate a penny or not, I am honored by your listenership and look forward to continue to serving you in the weeks to come. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, my guest, Lauren Navarro from the Environmental Defense Fund, and of course, for all of you for listening. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for a workover. I'll try to help you with your work problem. Plus, the promise and perils of microdoses of LSD and mushrooms at work. And the week after that, an interview with Cisco's former CEO, John Chambers, who 2020 named America's Best Boss, and who was also named one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world. Until next Thursday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't. Bye.